All right. Welcome to the Growth Over Comfort podcast. This is your host, Simone. I'm right here joined with my brother, Dawit.
The co-host, Dawit.
All right. Man, it's 2019 already. That's crazy.
It's amazing. Happy New Year, y'all.
First and foremost, man, it's been a long time. How you been, man?
Oh, I've been way too good. It's been a lot of reflection. It's been a lot of stimulating my serotonin, a lot of reflection. And a lot to share, actually. So I'm excited to see what comes out.
Yeah, man. 2018 was a good year, honestly. Arguably one of the best years of my life.
Yeah.
I think I learned the most.
Yeah, the only year better was 93 when I was born.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, man. What's probably the most inspiring lesson you learned from 2018?
Wow. It's amazing. Couple of things I learned in 2018. One is... I realized the power of consistency, because when I was consistently doing the right things, I was getting the right results. But sometimes I got bored and I started overthinking stuff, and I stopped doing the things that got me where I was, and I started backsliding. Mm. It happened in one area of my life. And it's so funny. Of course, I knew the repercussions and I've heard stories, but actually reliving some of it I don't know, it's very humbling. It makes you realize why it's easier just to stay on path consistent instead of going back and forth, because you're losing energy. It's like an airplane. You keep leaving the ground, coming down, ground, so you'll never reach your destination on the time you want. And sometimes if you do reach your destination, the time you were supposed to reach it initially is always going to be better than when you reach it. Mm. But it's better to still reach it than not reach it.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's one of the biggest things I took away. But there's a lot of things. What did you get?
For me, it was a year of like transformation, a year of self-acceptance, a year of alignment, just every dimension, mind, body, and soul. Just kind of taking the time to live life for myself for once, you know, just kind of pulling away from a lot of associations that were not fundamental to my growth. It was tough. It was one of the most uncomfortable and most unsettling years, but also the most liberating, to be honest, because for the first time in my life, I just get to be myself, you know, and remove all these masks that I've conditioned myself to place. So it was really tough, not gonna lie. A lot of time spent reflecting, and I also did my detox this year. Like I told you.
Awesome.
I did 1 week complete fast, just water, drinking 2 gallons of water a day, and meditating and praying, just deep prayer, twice a day. Start the day off and end the day off with that. And then the following 2 weeks, I did no solid foods, just straight juiced, cold pressed juice. And honestly, it was amazing. It was, if you've heard of the term biohacking, it's just hacking my whole biology, just cleaning out everything from a cellular level to just even headspace. Just a lot of clarity in my mind, in the things that I do, in the way that I move. So it was great. It was a year of just cleansing. And now I think this new year is going to be a year of liberation for me. Just mental freedom, financial freedom, freedom in every sense. So I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, and I also learned that my intuition is from God. And whenever I feel convicted is when I don't listen to my intuition. I remember losing a 6-year relationship this year. And the whole time I had the right intuition, but I kept on fighting it. And it just went to a point where it was going nowhere. And I had to die to my old self to get out of it. And what that did is it made me dig deep to my subconscious, because when you're born till 7 years of age, 95% of your subconscious is built to who you are today, your identity, and only 5% is your conscious. So it made me realize, wow, if my life from 0 to 7 is 95% of my life right now, let me go back and rewire my networks. Let me see some of the goods, the okays and the bads. And it forced me to dig deeper, and it gave birth to something that I was already doing, but now it's a confirmation to be a neuropsychologist, and to be a movie director, and start doing therapy. So I think this is one of the biggest years I was able to realize that. And I feel so blessed, and I feel so, so rewarded for God blessing me with this, so I can share it with everyone else too. So it's an amazing feeling, and once you have this feeling, nothing can match this feeling.
That's true.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah.
All right, well, today we kind of wanted to talk about shifting the whole focus from this whole toxic masculinity into conscious masculinity. And I guess, like, contrary to common belief, regardless of your gender, we all contain both masculine and feminine energy. And your leading energy reflects your inner nature and values. So we all have a masculine and feminine energy, regardless of your gender. And the one that seems to lead is the one that you're in tune with the most. So when you try and lead with the other energy is when you feel kind of off. You don't feel, it doesn't feel natural. You're trying to be something that you're not. And the intent of this podcast today is to explain the various masks that men put on, why they're there, and how we can take them off. It's not intended to change anyone. We just want to help people become who God essentially created you to be. And for our female listeners, we'd like for you to be aware of why men wear certain masks, how you can communicate with men when they're hiding behind them, and how you can support and inspire men to slowly remove these masks. Because at the end of the day, this is a collective issue that we need to collaborate on if we want to see any change. So I think one of the biggest problems in this whole created concept of masculinity is we really don't have a problem talking about things such as sports or women or cars or finance, anything that's external pretty much, but anything that looks inward, or we have to talk about our problems, or we have to address a certain issue, we tend to become paralyzed. And even though we have the data for it, we automatically block ourselves off from it by putting on a mask, whether it's a Joker mask where you use humor to deflect any certain emotional sensation, or the stoic mask, or an athletic mask, whatever it is. So I think that's one of the biggest problems, is a discussion. We don't talk about these things as much as that we're supposed to.
Definitely. And if we do, it's so shallow that we feel like we hit enough points and we don't have to go back to this area. And that's what makes it so frustrating, because we're so used to a shallow conversation. What if we lose someone if we try to be more in-depth? And what if they fall in love with the mask more than the real person? And I think we should not look at people's masks anymore. I think we should get to a level of seeing people behind the mask. And the way you do that, I think, is by making people feel comfortable. So that's one thing I like to do, is when I meet someone, I like to make someone comfortable, so that way they can remove their walls and guards, so I can talk to them. And the moment I sense they have a mask, I like to mirror their mask. And it's hard, because sometimes behind their mask is ego. And I learned this year, you can't help people's ego with ego. I have to work within their collective narrative of their ego. And the way I do that is pretty much not give power to that ego and weaken it, because ego is not us. You know, sometimes we say, oh yeah, this is my ego doing this. No, I think you're the energy to your ego. You're funding this ego that you built. And this ego is lonely. It can't be by itself. It needs to be with you. And as long as you give it energy, and as long as people are feeding that ego, it's going to be bigger than it is. So if we're able to starve the ego, it's going to make you realize you are the cause and the effect. I'll give you an example. For example, you might think you're a nice person until someone cuts you off. So now what the ego is going to tell you is, hey, you're a nice guy, but he made you do it. It's him. So So if you have that mentality, you're not gonna help yourself. You're actually gonna hurt yourself because you're gonna think you're perfect until this thing does it. What you have to realize is if someone cuts you off, there's different ways you can look at it. And if you avoid those different ways, you're putting on a conscious masculinity. Mm. So what helps me is I put a joker lens. So the way I look at it is if someone cuts me off, this is my favorite one. The way I look at it is growing up as a child, that person was not picked first. They're always picked last. So now as an adult, the only way they can get past that is by cutting people off, by being first. So I let them grow in front of my eyes and give them that moment because I realize, you know, if that's the way they want to live their life, that's on them. But I'm not going to let them dictate my attitude. You see? Mm. So another example is sometimes, you know, the ego is like that monster under your bed. You know, it's a kid who can't sleep with the lights turned off. He says, no, there's a monster in the bed. So a lot of people, they try to use ego to fight ego. And you tell that kid, no, there's no monster, and you get mad. And then the person says, no, the ego is there. Because the ego is there because it's in his head. So the more energy you're giving to this monster, for example, in this scenario, you're giving more power to the ego. And that's what keeps the ego alive. But if you joke with the little kid and say, wow, how does this ego look, this monster look like? So what you're really asking is, what does this ego look like? I don't know. So now he goes into the possibility of, what if it's not a monster, it's ego? Maybe it's just me who made it up. Once you help people get to that conclusion, they'll remove that ego. And the ego is the glue to the mask, and the mask will collapse. Mm.
Yeah, I agree with that. But the ego, they say the ego is formed around the ages of 3 or 4, and its intention is to protect us. So is the ego really a bad thing? I think it's bad if it's conditioned to be bad. So let's say you've experienced something in your life and it went opposite of what you expected it to be. Mm-hmm. You then condition the ego to protect you from that same situation happening again.
Right.
So let's say you burned a friend of yours did something to you and backstabbed you. Mm-hmm. What your ego is going to do now is automatically assume that people are going to backstab because it happened already, because it's trying to protect you.
Okay, I have a challenge for that. So if you're living that way, assuming, which most of us do, that means we're in the survival mentality, right? Mm-hmm. And when we're in survival mentality, our guards will be up for those certain emotions. Mm-hmm. Because our mind will recognize there was a certain emotion in the past that hurt us, and we want to detect that emotion before it happens. So anything that senses towards that emotion, we're going to have our guards up. So now it's pretty much like driving the car with the gas and the brake. You see? Mm. Instead of just cruise control. So the way I look at it is, yeah, maybe the ego could make me heal faster for that moment. But generally speaking, I wouldn't count on it to... I would rather forgive and forget. That's my philosophy. Mm. And as long as I forgive and forget, the ego could be there, but it won't take dominion. It won't take full-fledged. Because me using the ego to hide that pain is actually living an illusion. And I'm only going to go through that situation over and over again. It's like, for example, let's say I haven't forgiven someone, right, for what they did. Since I have that energy inside me, I'm only going to attract all those situations to keep funding that ego. Because the ego is a trump card. Because I'm using the ego to get out of that situation. So the more opportunities the ego can be used, it's going to be used because it needs that usage to stay alive.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. I think another problem is the way that a man is defined, I guess, in society. Mm. A real man must always, you know, be successful at everything he does, be physically fit, strong-willed, skilled at fixing things. Mm-hmm. Good at sports, or at the very least, like, know a lot about them. Mm-hmm. Attractive enough to women to be able to get into bed with them. That's like a characteristic, quote unquote, of a real man. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, a real man must never be interested in what women think about his appearance, which is contradictory. Mm-hmm. He should never be too emotional, afraid, without the answer to a problem. And the worst of them all is like to never be seen crying.
Exactly.
That's like the worst thing you can do as a man. So I think these societal perceptions of men or masculinity is very debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
And it paralyzes a lot of men who want to feel and be in tune with their feminine energy, but society is telling them to be something that they're actually not. So that's why there's a lot of problems in relationships, both platonic and romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, I think the biggest example of that is like sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one place. That's why men love sports so much, because it's an environment where men can be emotional. We can embrace each other. We can cry in mm-hmm. front of each other.
Exactly.
That's the only place in society, if you think about it, where men can be vulnerable.
That's true.
And not be judged for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's a big problem. It starts with the definition or how we define masculinity.
Exactly. And because we've been doing it for so too long, it becomes part of our identity.
Yes.
And, you know, we want to be alphas. You know, we want to be a dog, you know. Oh, I got this. You know, it's on me. And the reality of the matter is that might be temporarily the best solution, but long term it has repercussions. Because the same thing that people are applauding you for, the moment they stop applauding you, now, because you're hiding behind that identity for so long, you won't know what to do with yourself.
Mm.
And you're going to be so empty, and you're going to start to question who you are. Because all this time, this image you build of this macho, this you don't show emotions, and people respect you for that, quote unquote. But when a crisis happens and they see a side of you, now they're going to lose respect and credibility.
Mm.
And trust is like cooking, you know, like it takes hours to cook the food, but in 2 minutes we finish the meal. So same thing with trust, right? It takes a long time to build, but right away it could be gone. So that whole dynamics of withstanding your character for people's approval will be the same thing that you'll lose people's approval for.
That's true. That's very true.
You see? So it's very dangerous to have toxic masculinity.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Very risky.
And the funny thing is, none of us can ever successfully live up to any standard we've created.
Right.
Few people even come close.
Right.
So
right?
But the funny thing is, like, falling short has like huge like demoralizing consequence.
Exactly.
Falling short from those standards, you're often labeled as like soft,
mm-hmm.
weak, gay, or even worse categories.
Right.
And to disagree with any of the places, like disagreeing with any of that places you on a pedestal for bullying and to be ridiculed and even beat up in certain situations. A lot of men have faced a lot of physical and emotional abuse because they were going against what society, I guess, presumes as a standard for men.
Exactly. And you brought a good point too. You said people who are bullied, right? They turn into this macho. That's very dangerous in my opinion, because when they were bullied, their self-image was so low that they made sure to never go back to that feeling again. So to make sure they're never in that situation, someone who got bullied became buffer, you know? Someone who was always last, you know, in academics became the smartest kid. So they did the opposite because of that feeling or emotion. And emotion is the end result of a past experience. So as long as they're attached to that emotion, they're living in that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So they haven't really healed themselves. It's like a roof, right? Maybe the roof, you know, the tiles are gone and now you just put a Band-Aid over it. It's good till it rains
mm-hmm.
because there's going to be a rain over that roof and it's going to leak and it's going to flood the whole house. So till there's another crisis in their moment, in their life, you know, they're always going to go back to that emotion. So I think if they detach from that emotion and learn, that's called wisdom.
Mm.
You see? So I think you should face it face front instead of making sure it never happened. This philosophy, it will never happen again. I'm going to do this and, you know, pretty much hope for the best.
Mm.
I think that's still running away from the core situation of why you were bullied. maybe the bully was trying to teach you a lesson that you don't want to learn, and they used a bad approach, and now you focus on the approach instead of their intentions. You see what I'm saying? So that's one way of looking at it. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it all has to do with conditioning, to be honest.
Right.
Because, like, as children, it starts when we're kids. We're placed into these boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And through improper conditioning, we tend to ignore the walls that are closing in on us.
Mm-hmm.
And we feel suffocated. We feel, like, trapped. And the only thing we know how to do is the blocks to just act the way that we were conditioned to be. So as a kid growing up, especially in an African culture,
poof,
when something happens to you, you're supposed to just suck it up. All that stuff. Like,
yeah.
We're not supposed to show any sign of weakness. You're supposed to hold the family together. But that's also why a lot of men, especially in our culture, suffer from high blood pressure,
right,
suffer from diabetes, suffer from depression, because we bottle things up. We're expected to bottle it up and just save the whole family. But in reality, we need to lean on our wives, lean on our kids, and lean on our friends, our confidants, to let them know, like, yo, I don't have it together. I'm not okay. These are the things that I've been thinking about. These are the things I'm worrying about. Is there any way that you can help me? Or even just to talk about it to somebody.
Right.
But we see that as, like, a huge sign of weakness.
Right.
For the leader of a family to go out and be vulnerable to somebody is almost, right, like, said it, but not it. Like,
yeah. Even my dad, I thought he was this strong guy, nothing can break him. I remember I saw him crying one time. I was surprised. I was like, what happened, Dad? He's like, oh, you know, I just remember my mom. You know, I left the village when I was younger, so I never grew up with her in my 20s. Da, da, da. And he was just crying and crying and crying. And initially I thought, wow, what a weak person. Did he just break out of character? You know, is he something off? What happened? But I realized, wow, I think that's the strongest thing he did, crying in front of me, because it affirmed that he's not perfect, and strength is not perfection. Strength is vulnerability, being yourself, because you're strong enough to take what people think of you. Exactly. Because it's made of your self-image. And also, you're right, growing up too, we go through, by the time you're 18, you've gone through millions of negative experiences. Growing up, you're told, no, you can't do this. This is not for you. You'll never be like this. You're like your mom, or you're like your dad. The situation you're in won't make you do this. So you hearing this over and over and over again, this negative movie, you know, and this tape playing in the back of your head over and over and over. By the time you're 18, you know, you average 60,000 thoughts a day. And out of 60,000 thoughts a day, 80% is negative. So it takes no work to be negative. Yep. It's automatic. So now it actually takes work to be positive. So now, from that standpoint, that's why we have to go back to our roots. Like I mentioned earlier, one thing I learned this last year was going back to my subconscious. What kind of negative programming do I have to take out of my system? You know, it's like a virus. Yeah, I can buy antivirus for 1 month, you know, but unless it's like a Mac, you know, there's no viruses on the laptop, I won't be full functioning. I need to get rid of that bug. What is something slowing me down? And sometimes you don't know what you don't know. So one thing I've done is I've actually talked to my aunts more. Whoever influenced me that I know of from when I was born 07, I've been able to communicate with them to see why I think the way I think now. Because the seeds were sowed those years. And now I'm reaping it. And sometimes, if you don't like the fruits, you got to change the seeds that you're sowing. And a lot of people don't think like that. They think, oh, well, this is a fruit. This is how it's supposed to be, you know, and I'm just going to take a bite, even though it's half rotten. So that's a bad mentality. That means you're playing defeated. And I don't want that. I want to live the full potential. So part of me living the full potential is changing my programming.
That's true. Very true. And I think not a lot of people know, but a lot more men are dying than women when it comes to mental health concerns. I went ahead and like looked up some statistics. And according to the FBI's 2015 annual report on crime in the U.S., nearly 88% of all homicides are committed by men. Men in the U.S. are 6 times more likely to commit suicide than women. And to make matters worse, men are significantly less likely to seek help from a suicide prevention institution and half as likely to simply just visit a doctor. And I mean, just to be blunt about it, women are seeking help while men are just dying. So, and I mean, we can't blame men because they're conditioned to kind of just tough it out, like we were saying. You know, seeking help is a sign of weakness. So I think that's why this topic has been, I don't know, just really important to us recently, because a lot of men are dying
right
before us. And these men are our family members, fathers, uncles, brothers, or whatever. And I think it's time we kind of, you know, just reverse this trend that's going on. And it doesn't take much, honestly, to get started.
Exactly. You just need to look into your life and stop lying to yourself to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're, if you like where you are right now, just keep doing what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know? But if you're not satisfied and you think you can do better, I think these are things we should all look at consistently,
mm-hmm.
deliberately, you know? And unless you have that mindset, I don't think you'll have a growth mindset. Either you have a fixed mindset or a growth mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And change is the only thing constant. If you don't like change, you hate irrelevance even more.
That's true.
Yeah.
I think if as men, if we don't fix this problem that we have, this is going to start to leak into our relationships.
Yes.
Not only platonic, but romantic as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this lady called Glennon Doyle. And she wrote the book Love Warrior. And in her book, she talks about the disintegration of marriage and how she and her husband rebuilt it from scratch. And in the book, she says, what it takes for a real man and a real woman to love each other is an incredible unlearning. She says pretty much how it requires taking apart what our culture has taught us about what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, to realize how much we've been poisoned, to strip down to who we actually are, and to be naked and unashamed in front of each other. And she goes on to say, that's the kind of relationship I started to realize was possible if I learned how to take off my own mask. I wouldn't have to apologize or hide my masculinity, but I wouldn't have to use it as a facade. So that's what her husband said to her after this little deconditioning process they went through. And their marriage was rocky, onto the point of having divorce papers signed. But they really took the time to just unveil all these masks together and just communicate. And once they did that, they were able to live abundant, fulfilled life that marriage promises us.
Awesome. Wow. And think about it. A lot of people wait till a crisis to change. And our message is, why wait for a crisis? You can make that same decision, you know, in a negative situation or in a spirit of joy and inspiration.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's better to prevent than cure.
Exactly. I think you said it like a couple minutes ago, the whole like alpha male, like top dog thing.
Right.
And I think that's very dangerous because, first of all, that doesn't exist.
Thank you.
It's constructed.
Ouch.
Like this whole idea of an alpha male is something that society has constructed. Right. So if you're a man and you don't fall under this category of a quote-unquote alpha male, you feel like you're lesser of a man.
Right.
And like there's this like, we're always like suggested to like get in touch with our feminine side, or you know, people tell us to kind of, you know, just, yo, relax and feel whatever. It's said to us, but how many people actually practice that? And there's like those terms that people use, like metrosexual, like who is a man who pretty much is in tune with his feminine side, takes care of his hygiene, has a good sense of fashion and a higher level of emotional intelligence. We like to be divisive and consider them metrosexual. Like we created a word for somebody who's trying to do what we're telling them to do. So, which is interesting. And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum. And we have that society constructed term known as alpha male, which is the ideal man who is more focused on his leadership skills, assertiveness, finances and doesn't really spend any time at all with all that feminine stuff, quote unquote. Almost as if he is completely disconnected from his feminine side.
Right.
And in my opinion, these boxes that we put men into have a major contribution to this epidemic of toxic masculinity we see today.
Yeah. Can you share like an example of your maybe personal?
For me, I tend to catch myself wearing the stoic mask a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Stoic meaning I have everything together. I'm good. Like I know what I'm doing. And it stems from like the whole like asking for help is a sign of weakness.
Right.
That's one thing that I honestly hate doing like my whole life. I'm getting better at it now, but
right.
I don't know. I'd rather just suffer in silence than to reach out and ask somebody for help
right.
in times that I need help, because I've been conditioned to believe that a man should have it all together. A man should never ask for help. So I put on the stoic mask and act like I have everything together when I don't.
Right.
In reality, that's one of my biggest masks.
Right. Mine is this, it's a little bit of a joke. It's like a sarcastic mask. I say sarcastic because to get out of my reality, I'm good at painting a picture. So, because you know, our subconscious doesn't know what's real or fake.
Mm.
So in my mind, I've built a storyline or a narrative of this image of, yeah, you know, I'm going through this rough patch. But man, it's going to get so much better. You know, once it gets better, I don't know what to do with it, you know? So once I have that, I wouldn't say fantasy, but some kind of, yeah, I'll just use fantasy for now. It rubs off my attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So now when people ask me, how are you doing? This is a tricky question. I don't know. Do they want to know where I'm going? Where I was? Where I am right now? I can give you three answers.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? If you want to ask how I'm doing right now, I'm not where I want to be. I'm disappointed.
You can think of every other answer except the right answer to give to people.
Exactly. But if they want to know where I am or how I'm doing right now, oh yeah, you know, I'm going through the situation, but man, I got this lined up and next month I'm doing this year.
Mm.
Man, once I start doing that, bro, I'm going to be do. And now I'm building the picture. Now I'm slowly turning the ship to a different direction. And I'm using the creativity, I'm stimulating creativity in their mind and indirectly giving birth to a fantasy that they can live in. So that way they can pretty much stay away from my reality.
That's good.
Yeah. So it's like this.
You build them a boat in their mind and set them sail the other direction.
Exactly. Literally, but that's, yeah. I'm really good at it. Yeah.
That's true.
So that's the way I look at it. And the way I comfort my mask, you know, and keep it going and encourage it is by saying, hey, you know what? Why should I spread negative to people? You know, why should I expose my dirty laundry in public?
Mm.
You know, as soon as the clothes are gone from the washer, the dryer, I want to put it from the washer dryer as quick as possible. You know what I mean? But I want to show them how the dryer clothes will look. But I don't want them to see, I don't want no one to see me growing in front of their eyes. I want them to see the end product.
Mm.
And if they are seeing then, if they are seeing me growing up in front of their eyes, then to me that's the weakness.
And I think that's where it stems from, the thing that you deal with of everybody perceiving you as this perfect
right.
guy. I feel like most people that know you see you as like Dawit is so perfect, blah blah blah. And I feel like that in itself creates a mask. Mm-hmm. Like other people have created a mask and placed it on your face, pretty much.
And they're injecting my fantasy mask that I'm already reconstructing right now.
Exactly.
They're speeding up the process.
Exactly.
And naturally, as a construction, you know, if there's more people adding into your project, now you're thinking of expanding your project.
Exactly.
You know, so it becomes fun. It becomes exciting. It becomes me looking forward to those questions.
Because
now I'm not looking forward to answering the question. I'm looking forward to getting out of that question.
Mm.
So that's one mask, definitely. I'd say is the sarcastic, I'd say.
Yeah, it definitely deters you from looking inward.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Exactly.
Or anybody else looking inward for that fact too.
Yeah, exactly. Anyone too, exactly. Wow. Too. Yeah, so that's one weakness, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think men are fundamentally flawed or broken. Mm. For all you niggas ain't ish advocates out
there.
I think men are just trapped.
Right.
I know that's how I felt for a good portion of my
Same.
Life.
100%.
I don't think you're flawed or broken,
mm-hmm.
or I think we're just trapped from conditioning.
Right.
I was conditioned to believe what I believe now. And that's why I'm taking the time to decondition my mind of all the toxic masculinity that was placed into me.
And I'm pissed the way I was conditioned.
We shouldn't be pissed.
I'm so pissed.
I think everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, I was like, damn, I was so gullible. But I was like 9.
But I mean, like, if you remember all those boxes we stuffed our emotions into when we were younger, as we outgrow the boxes, they transform into masks that hold us back.
I like that.
And those masks end up hurting our friends, family, career partners, and intimate lovers.
Exactly. Because if you don't heal what's bleeding right now, you're going to cut people who didn't cut you. That's where that line comes from.
You're going to bleed all over the people.
Exactly. Who didn't even cut you at all. Mm. You know what I mean? So we don't want that, for sure.
Yeah. I think almost every man has a story in which he learned through pain, humiliation, or even force, how he does not measure up to a societal perception.
Exactly.
When that happens to him, masks become more than a way to hide. They become armor.
I like
that. So you're not only hiding, but you're also using that mask as a self-defense.
Exactly. And as a weapon too.
As a weapon too.
Big time, exactly. As a weapon too, yeah. Yeah.
And then I think because of this, I believe all men, honestly, including myself, have worn or currently are wearing a variety of masks.
Same.
In order to endure these like expectations.
Right, yeah.
In front of the world and live up to a definition of what it means to be a man, pretty much.
100%. By this day society. They said men should be this day. And the question is, who's they society?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? They can't dictate my life.
They don't pay your bills. Right?
They don't pay my bills. They don't pay my bills at all.
All right, so I have a couple questions for you.
I have a couple answers.
So what does it mean to be a man to you?
I think being a man means being one with yourself. Mm. It's not the absence of vulnerability, I think, but it's the absence. Being a man is like being present, you know, in this moment. If you ask me how I'm doing, I'm giving you the answer of my mind, body, and spirit. All three has to align. So as long as all three align, I think that's being a man.
Let me challenge you then.
Yeah, challenge.
Shouldn't that be the goal of a human being in general? Why do we have to place that on a man?
Yeah, that's true. Even for a woman. But yeah, that's true. Man, right? And woman. Yeah, for both people, yeah.
I think when we say, what does it mean to be a man? That in itself is a very confusing question, because you're setting up the paradox of a man has to be a certain way.
Right.
But in reality, characteristics are gender neutral.
Exactly, yeah.
Leadership is gender neutral.
Exactly.
Strength, courage, all that stuff is gender neutral.
Right.
Why do we have to attach everything that's strong or that has to do with strength to a man, and then everything that has to do with weakness to a woman?
Ooh, that's a very good point.
Everything that's physical is attached to a man. Everything that's emotional is attached to a woman.
Exactly.
But aren't we human beings?
Exactly.
First and foremost, before we're men, before we're women, we're human beings.
Yeah, we're spirit.
And then even before that, we're spirits.
Yeah.
So we're one piece of a whole.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a very good point. So yeah, having said that, yeah, for both women and men, I think you're a real woman or a real man if you're one with yourself.
So a follow-up question I guess I had for that would be, from what we just talked about right now, how do you see this holding people back from reaching their full potential?
Good question. So I think it's going to hold you back from your full potential because it's going to make you comfortable. Mm-hmm. It's going to give you this arrival syndrome. Oh, I build my mind, so I've arrived. And now the body and soul, it's okay. They can hang out where they are, because the soul can only see the future through the past lens of the mind. So if I trick the mind, because the mind doesn't know what's real or fake, with my body, which is my subconscious, I'm able to tell the soul where my future is. So I'm looking for answers with a strong bias. You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree.
It sounds a little bit crazy when I said it. No, I agree. Because the soul can't see the future without the past. It's the soul. And the mind doesn't know what's real or fake. And the body, which is your subconscious, is just an experience. It's the memories of experiences. So if I'm able to mix those two, I'm holding myself back from my full potential. And having said that, if I'm a slave to my body, then I'm definitely not living my full potential. But if I own my body, if I'm the master of my subconscious and I callous it, then I'll be able to live my full potential.
I agree. That kind of reminds me of that quote.
Yeah.
It's kind of a tangent off of what you just said, but a man who's not a slave to his sexual desires is a strong man.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah. Sexual desire stems from emotional starving. And emotional starving stems off spiritual starving.
And I think that's one of the biggest problems when it comes to sex offenders and molestation and rape and all that. This whole culture that's going on, I think that comes from men not holding other men accountable.
Oh yeah.
We have, as a society, we like to kind of tell women like, oh, she was asking for it, or she was wearing, you shouldn't be wearing this, or whatever. Which in a sense, like, obviously you should be mindful to some extent. Yes, I know that it's not fair, but I understand that's just how like the world operates. But at the same time, I think we can't deflect men's responsibility in this, because at the end of the day, men are the one that are committing these crimes.
Exactly.
So we have to address this topic to men and kind of let each other know, yo, like, if you see your friend talking down upon a woman, using degrading terms, just acting inappropriately around a woman, if sometimes we confuse love with enabling. But I think if you really love somebody, you hold them accountable. You don't enable them.
Come on, somebody.
So if I were to see you, God forbid, touching a woman inappropriately, and she did not seem like she was enjoying it at all or whatever.
Right.
Then I would kind of, you know, just pull you to the side, or, you know, just kind of mention it to you. Like, hey, man, I don't think you should be doing this. Are you aware of what you're doing?
Right.
Just to bring that awareness to them. Because I legit think that some men are not even aware of their actions when it comes to these things. They feel like, I don't know, I think we're conditioned to believe, yo, be aggressive, go and chase what you want, you know, go and attack what you want, don't take no for an answer, you know. That's kind of conditioned into our minds, and we allow that to play into this primal instinct when we pursue women, and that's when a woman becomes objectified. She becomes another tally on our cross list, you know. So
yikes.
I think we need to be very careful with that. And even for myself, honestly, I've hurt so many people in my life because of that toxic masculinity.
Right.
Or not only that, it's just certain things that I didn't address about myself. I would use women to kind of mask that, you know? So just being more mindful of those things. If I can do it, any other man can as well. Just be more mindful, surround yourself with, you know, just true authentic friends that will let you know what's up. Like, if you're messing up, they would have no problem confronting you about it. So I think if you really do love your friends as you say you do, you wouldn't enable them, you'd hold them accountable.
Exactly. Let me turn the question on you, the same question you asked me. What does it mean to be a man or a woman to you?
Well, I think I kind of answered it, though, because I don't believe we should distinguish characteristic with gender.
Okay.
I think a man and a woman, both of them should both be driven. They should both be in alignment with themselves. They both, if everybody has the potential to be a leader, but it doesn't mean that everybody should be a leader.
Ooh.
Just like a parent. Everybody obviously has the potential to be a parent, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that everybody should be a parent. There are some people that don't deserve to be parents.
Or some people have kids, but they're not parents.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think personality traits, like we were talking about earlier, is just your personal reality. It's not attached to any gender. It's gender neutral.
Exactly.
But oftentimes, we're the ones who construct this. None of this really exists.
Like, exactly.
I mean, obviously, it's easier said than done. Even for us, we fall into that
right
constantly. But none of this exists. This whole masculinity.
Yeah.
Like, none of that stuff. It's all created by the mind.
Mm-hmm.
So if you choose to succumb to it and allow it to dictate your life, then that's the life you'll live.
Exactly. I like that. Yeah. Perfect.
I have another question for you.
Yikes.
What is your greatest fear?
Ooh. Oh, easy. My greatest fear is when I die. And I go to God and God says, hey, I gave you this much and you only did this much. I would hate to be in that situation. And my newest one is, I would hate to blow off the people God sent my God sent for me. You know what I mean? Like, let's say there was a, you know, a friend God sent, blessed me with, a confidant. Me turning them off and me pretty much blowing them away from me. Because I need, because he can't go to heaven. David wouldn't be David without Jonathan. But if David blew away Jonathan, David would be, wouldn't be the David we know now.
That's true.
So we need our Jonathans, the Nathans. So these are my two biggest fears that constantly push me every single day. It's not, I'm not fear driven now, I'm ambition driven.
My fear is similar to yours, actually. To meet God at the gates of heaven. And he kind of just has his little his little book, I guess, of me, the story of Simone, and he kind of just says, this is what I had planned for you. And yeah, that's nice, like, you did this, this and that, but if you really would have really walked by faith and not by sight, then this is what you could have had. Or I don't know, just that whole idea is what really fears me, brings fear into me the most.
Right.
And like you said, I don't live by fear, but it's just something that I think about, and it's something that drives me to always be the best version of myself.
It's a driver, right? Exactly. Yeah, so that's awesome. Yeah.
Wow. And then who are you pretending to be?
Ooh, I like that. Me, I'm pretending to be who I'm inspired by. I'm a, for example, let's say I'm inspired by, right now I'm inspired by Dr. Joe Dispenza. He's a neuroscientist. So now everything I do is to imitate him to my friends. Because the way I look at it is, when I learn from him, I'm excited, I'm genuinely growing. So now I want people to feel that way. So instead of me projecting Dawit to those people, I'm projecting Joe Dispenza to them. You see what I'm saying? So that's, so I'm always a product of who I'm inspired by. So, which is very dangerous, because now I get inspired easily. So you can imagine who I'm not all the time.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, so that's my biggest thing. Yeah. What about you?
Who am I pretending to be? I think I said earlier, just kind of this, like, stoic person.
Ooh,
this invincible stoic person that has it all together, has few problems but helps other people solve their problems.
Same.
And I think that's why sometimes I feel like this imposter syndrome.
Ooh.
Because that's not true.
Right.
Well, I'm far from perfect. I'm just as broken as the next man. It's just the only difference is I have that awareness. And I don't know, I'm just kind of dedicating my life to understanding and rebuilding and rewiring the brain constantly. But that does not mean in any sense that I'm impervious or immaculate. Like, I make just as many mistakes as the next man, like I said.
Exactly.
So kind of just, that's what 2018 really helped me discover, is to take that stoic mask off and just present myself to people, you know? Like, yo, I'm going through this, but it's all good. God's got my back, blah, blah, blah. But that's another dangerous thing, too, is saying things that we don't firmly believe. If you don't firmly believe the stuff that you're saying, it'll create a cognitive dissonance in your mind.
Exactly.
So what you believe and what you do and what you, how you act does not match.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, that's one thing that I really focused on in 2018. In 2019, it's going to be maintenance, pretty much. Trying to maintain this new level of openness. And I don't know, just, I guess some ways I've benefited from practicing vulnerability is just a whole bunch of new ways of existing in the world opened up for me.
I like that.
A lot more honesty in my life, a lot more compassion, acting for the good of others without ego, and I think most importantly, like, the ability to heal from my own wounds. Like, not being dependent on others to heal my wounds.
Right.
Taking the time to feel what I feel, taking the time to understand what I feel.
Exactly.
Instead of, you know, going to to like external satisfaction. Just looking inward and trying to understand what you're going through. Because I think God teaches us through pain. He doesn't cause pain.
Right.
He doesn't tempt us. But our free will causes us to stumble.
Ooh.
And inflict pain onto us and others. But within that pain, there's a lesson to be learned. So if you're gonna mess up.
Uh-huh.
Breaking news, where you're gonna break up and break you're gonna mess up a lot in your life.
Big time.
You're gonna endure pain, you're gonna, you know, just go through trials and tribulations. It's just part of life. But the thing is, are you gonna learn a lesson from it? Are you gonna derive a lesson from what you're going through? I think that's the most important part.
Exactly. And if you don't learn your lesson, you'll keep taking the same test over and over again until you pass. That's why we should never forget where we came from, because we'll always go back. I always tell that to people.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I mean, even when you look at celebrities, you know how like we always, whenever we see a celebrity pass, we always say, wow, like they had the life that I dreamt about. How could they kill themselves?
Mm-hmm.
They had all this money, blah, blah, blah. Like, rest in peace, Anthony Bourdain and Robin Williams and all these people that we lost recently. But it all comes down to these masks. There's this writer named John Updike, and he said that being a celebrity is a mask that ends up eating into the face. He demonstrates how detrimental these masks can be if we just look at celebrities.
Exactly.
It's almost as if they've lost a sense of their real selves, since they are constantly expected to uphold this persona or character in the public eye. That's why you see so many wealthy, successful celebrities who end up taking their lives. Everyone wonders how someone that has it all together will end their life. Well, there's your answer.
Exactly. And he said celebrities money. Check this out. Some people are so poor. They're so poor. All they have is money. And the richest people are, when they cry, people wipe off their tears. Well, how can you get to that point? You have no masks. Or you have enough people who know about you and not your mask. That's the richest people, because only those people can wipe off your tears.
That's true.
So never be so poor that all you have is money.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, many of us like wear those masks for so long that we're not even sure what's actually underneath the mask anymore.
Right.
We've lost track of like what we are. Lost track of like where we end and where the mask begins.
Ooh, I like that.
And I think that's why removing the mask is not only terrifying, it's painful.
Yes.
It's literally fused to our faces.
Yeah.
You're literally peeling off skin when you're peeling off the mask.
Right. And the ego is the glue to the mask, and it hurts.
Because
now the ego has to find somewhere else to live.
Exactly.
It's got to move out.
And I experienced that, me personally, this year.
Really? Of
kind of that's why it was very uncomfortable and painful for me to remove some of the masks, because I firmly believed that those were a part of me. So they had fused, that mask had fused onto my face.
Wow. I like that.
So I don't know, just taking the time to address the elephants in the brain, you know, just, we know they're there. They're huge. Blatantly, they're there, but we tend to disregard them and ignore them.
And part of removing it too is like, we're disappointed that we thought it was real this whole time.
Yes.
And then now we realize, wow, you know, I even knew that I knew that it was not me. Now to take it off now?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. So that whole psychological disappointment lowers your self-image.
Yes.
So now you need to recoup by adding more value to yourself to make up for the space. Because the mask doesn't take a lot of space in your face. In your identity. So the only way you can fill up that gap is with true value.
Exactly.
And dying to your old self and giving birth to who you can be and working towards that every single day.
I agree.
100%. Yeah. Awesome.
I firmly believe it's possible for men to evolve into like this modern archetype that can help them lead powerfully in business.
Amen.
Express courageously in relationships.
Amen.
Find inner peace and happiness along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And we can become a sounding board for women. Ooh. And other men in our lives, so that we may understand the rules and lift each other up.
Amen.
Because I think it's a collaborative effort, to be honest.
Awesome.
We can't single one person out.
I love that.
It's a dynamic.
Absolutely. and we won't stop till we reach every toxic masculine. We're coming for you, toxic masculines. which is me.
And to kind of just, I guess, end this with a quote from Dr. Brené Brown.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing weak about vulnerability. On the contrary, it sounds like truth and feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weakness.
Ooh. Can you repeat that? That was awesome, actually. Sorry.
Yeah, there's nothing weak about vulnerability. On the contrary, it sounds like truth and feels like courage. Truth and courage aren't always comfortable, but they're never weaknesses.
Bro, that line summarizes this whole hour. Literally, yeah, bro.
Man, that's why I chose she's an amazing person. If you guys haven't read any of her books, I highly suggest reading Dare to Lead and some various other books that Dr. Brené Brown has. Amazing woman who's speaking to both sides of the spectrum. And also, I recommend Lewis House, his book on called Mask of Masculinity. It's another good one. It goes through, I think, 7 or 8 various masks that men use throughout life. And we just have to educate ourselves, have these discussions. They're uncomfortable, mm-hmm. but that's the only way we can grow. Nothing grows in a comfortable place.
Exactly.
As beautiful as it is.
And one more shout out, bro, is Dr. Joe Dispenza, Becoming Supernatural. You can only become supernatural when you do what is not natural. Mm. And the only way you can remove that mask is you have to be unnatural, because naturally the mask has been part of your identity. So if you do opposite of that, you become supernatural.
Mm.
And supernatural is better than any mask. I guarantee it.
I agree. All right. Thank you for tuning in, y'all. Tune in for next week.
All right. Over and out from Dawi, TA, and Simone.